Hello, neighbors. This is Jeff and Stacy from Sandy, Utah, owners at the Aulani Resort on Oahu, and you're listening to My DVC Points.
Parents and the children could have fun together.
Please board quickly and safely. Our monorail will be departing momentarily.
Welcome to the My DVC Points podcast. Join the conversation as DVC members share their stories, personal preferences, and magical memories. Your reservation is confirmed. Your fast passes are booked. Pull up on the yellow strap because our journey into the magic of membership is about to begin.
To infinity and beyond.
Now, here's your host and curator of magical stories, Chad Pennycuff.
Welcome home, neighbors, to episode 60 of the My DVC Points podcast. Today's show is brought to you by our friends over at DVCResaleMarket.com, where they have over 100 years combined experience selling Disney Vacation Club contracts. Every single person there is a former direct guide from Disney. If you're looking to buy a contract, you can get that same Disney experience without having to pay Disney prices. If, God forbid, you have to sell your contract, you can trust them to find another family to continue the magical memories. We're in the middle of the Saratoga Springs review series, and I don't think a review series is, well, complete without looking back at some of the history as to what went on. So I invited my friend Brian Reed from Imagination Radio Network to do a little digging. What happened with the land before it became Saratoga Springs around the resort in Disney Springs? Well, I'd like to welcome to the show today my good friend, Brian Reed. Welcome back, Brian.
Hey, man. How you doing?
I am doing great tonight. I am so excited that you'd bless us again. I know we had you on the show for the Polly History Show. The listeners just went nuts over that. I got so much incredible feedback from it. I figured I'd roll the dice again and see if I could get you to rope you in to do a Saratoga Springs history for us.
Man, the Polynesian History Show was awesome. It's my favorite resort. I just hope that I do Saratoga Springs as much justice as I did for the Poly, because I really enjoyed the Poly. And this has been a winding road, to say the least.
Yeah, Saratoga Springs has kind of taken quite a bit of twists and turns and repurposing. I mean, Poly, it started as a resort and it stayed one. Okay.
This is true.
Why don't you walk us through the birth of Saratoga Springs area, including downtown Disney, from like inception? We'll just take us from a swamp that got drained and we'll go from there.
Let's go. So obviously we all know how Walt Disney World started, and that was really the creation of two improvement districts. So that's where we're going all the way back, that Walt wanted the blessing of size that they didn't have at Disneyland, that they wanted to have at Walt Disney World. So they had all of these acres, and they wanted to know how they could control it all themselves. So what they did was they found a loophole back in the statutes of Florida law back in the 60s. And they said, we're going to create these things called improvement districts. They created Reedy Creek Improvement District. And what that did was it allowed Walt Disney World to have final say. So permitting, zoning, everything that they needed to do that they would have had to have gotten state and local authority to do, they could now do on their own. So in the master plan, back in June of 1973, we're going to go a few years after Walt Disney World opened, part of the master plan was a residential community called Lake Buena Vista. Now, part of this community would be divided into four themed areas. There would have been golf, tennis, boating, and Western. One of those just isn't like the same. Not really sure what the Western theme was going to be about.
Yeah, I was going to say, man, like, what's up with that? I mean, is like, you know, John Wayne need a retirement home in Florida or something?
Maybe. I mean, the only thing I could guess would be that would be where the Tri-Circle D Ranch would be instead of it being over at Fort Wilderness. That'd be my only guess. But that didn't last very long. So May of the following year, so May of 1974, there were 134 townhomes that had been built, along with a new shopping area had just broken ground. Now, this shopping area was called Lake Buena Vista Village. Now, Chad, let me ask you this. Do you know where Lake Buena Vista Shopping Village was located?
Probably where downtown Disney is right now.
That would be a good guess. That'd be a very good guess, actually. It is actually the Marketplace District of Disney Springs.
Oh, okay.
If you look at the architecture, that also doesn't fit with the current theme of Disney Springs, nor did it fit the theme of Downtown Disney. So this is the original architecture that they had built in 1974 for the Lake Buena Vista Village. Now, the developer who was working on this master plan had even bigger dreams. He wanted to have single-family homes, apartments, and condos. So this is way before we get the idea of Golden Oak. They already wanted to have, all the way back in 1974, they wanted to have people living here at Walt Disney World.
Yeah, but it sounds like it gets back to that original concept of Epcot, of an actual community with people living and working and raising families there.
Absolutely. So this is where we come into the, I don't want to say controversy, but this was the first sticky situation. So we've already mentioned the improvement districts. And what are two things, Chad, that you are guaranteed if you're a resident of somewhere?
Death and taxes?
Close. Taxes and the right to vote. And with that, the Walt Disney World Company didn't like any of that. They didn't want any of these people to have those rights. Of course, they'd want their taxes, but the big issue was the right to vote. They did not want individual homeowners, residents, to be able to say what could and couldn't happen on Walt Disney World property. So they nixed it. They completely got rid of it, and they decided to change it into something else. This would then become the villas. So this would be the Villas Resort. With the residents gone, what were they going to do with the villas? The history here is really, really choppy, so we're going to do our very best job to try to condense it down into the correct decades. So here we go.
Yeah, because this thing twists and turns. So let me just recap here. So they built these homes here, but they didn't want people to have voting rights.
Yes.
Okay. You know, it's interesting, as DVC members, people think we have voting rights as a condominium association, but we really don't. The people with all the voting rights are Disney employees.
Correct.
Still to this day, even though we're deeded timeshare owners there, we can't vote. We can't amend a budget. We can't do anything.
Good point. Yeah, that was actually something I was going to ask you, because I didn't know. That was something I was curious about. If you as a DVC owner were technically a Florida resident.
No. We're not. We definitely legally own property there, but it's a timeshare. But we don't even get voting rights among the property that we own. They control it all.
Good to know. So the only Florida resident perk you get is the fact that you get your annual pass at the Florida discount.
And that's only if you bought direct. And you don't get the Florida pass, from what I'm told from some cast members who recently corrected me on a post. We get a DVC gold pass, which happens to be identical to the Florida Gold Pass, but it is definitely different in the system. And when we buy it, and we can buy it online, but then even when we go into the park to activate it, we have to pull out driver's license and blue card to prove that we're a DVC member and the names all match.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Very interesting. Thanks for giving us that little tip.
Oh, no problem.
Of course, all your listeners are going to know this already.
Well, if they don't, then, you know, the reason why they tune in is to learn more. So
exactly. If they didn't know, they know now.
Yep.
So now that the residents were gone, what was going to be done with all this property? It's important to note that the shopping village opened in March of 1975. And along with that, 60 treehouse villas were completed in October of that same year. As we mentioned, the residential area closed and these villas were still sitting there. Had to figure out what to do. In the early 1980s, they were transformed into a hotel resort, and the construction of the original Walt Disney World Conference Center began. Now, this resort opened as the Village Resort in 1985. Almost the best year ever, if I do say so myself.
You're dating yourself, Brian.
I know. The name changed again in 1989 to the Disney Village Resort. Always got to have that Disney name in there. And at the same time, the shopping village began to change its focus more on vacationers and was renamed Walt Disney World Village. Now, again, as we've already said, this is the current Marketplace District at Disney Springs. So we have these villas, and they were also broken up into different neighborhoods, so to speak. So they had the vacation villas, which were 1 and 2 bedroom condos. There were the Fairway Villas, which were open from 1978 to 2002. Now, these were townhomes that overlooked Lake Buena Vista Golf Course. And we've already mentioned the Treehouse Villas. Now, these were three-bedroom octagonal villas that sat on top of 10-foot-high pedestals to withstand any of the potential flooding from the Sasagula. And of course, it's on wetlands, so it's always going to flood. But something unique about these villas was that they were designed to showcase energy-efficient building techniques, which were trendsetters at the time. And since they've been redone, they have gone back in with new trend-setting energy-efficient techniques to make sure that they are always a step ahead of the building culture. Now, the villas were built and clustered around courtyards and cul-de-sacs to conserve as much space as possible. And there were two last sections. There was the Club Lake Villas, which were later added in the final building phase, and these were meant to be for the conventioneers, anyone attending meetings at the Walt Disney World Conference Center. And then finally, remember how we said that this developer wanted to have single family homes?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they actually built four models and they turned them into part of the resort. These were called the Grand Vista Suites, and they were four single family dwellings, which were supposed to be the original footprint of what you could potentially get in this single family neighborhood.
So they were like the model homes. So you could come back in and tour them and say, yeah, build me one of these.
Absolutely. Absolutely. They had an option of four different models. And the way it is with construction these days, or even back then, you got four models, but technically you got eight because you just flip it to give it a mirror image. And you get to walk in and see all of the different furnishings that you can have, just like you do today in any new construction subdivision. And you could actually rent a house at Walt Disney World. Like, how cool is that?
That sounds pretty darn cool. I mean, when you talk about these townhouse villas, I wonder how much they are similar to our DVC villas today. I mean, today we're kind of like flats that are stacked up. So when I hear townhouse, I hear like upstairs and downstairs.
Yes, that would be what I would guess as well. So most townhomes, it's going to be a second floor or first floor and a second floor. And then your condos are going to be based on a singular floor.
Now, these are probably in the golf area today where the golf course is and probably where the Saratoga Springs buildings are, right?
Yes. They were right on Lake Buena Vista Golf Course, which, I mean, how cool is that? You could walk out of your patio or off of your patio and be able to go and see one of the greens or the fairway or the tee box. Like, that's awesome.
I mean, there's a lot of people that really appreciate that live on a golf course, somewhat of a lifestyle, because it's so manicured and picturesque there.
And if you think about it, the way that they shaped this, it was really more like a senior community, if you think about it. At least three of those four original concept neighborhoods were really geared towards the elderly community or the retirement community, the ones who had the time to be able to live in leisure with playing golf, playing tennis, going boating whenever they had the opportunity to.
Interesting. Because, I mean, I think of that now and I think of, okay, retired people there, but they're probably going to have their grandkids running around all the time.
So that's the footprint of where Saratoga Springs started. So we're still a long ways away from Saratoga Springs. So let's go back and pick back up with the timeline. So we're in 1996. Now, this will date me. This was actually the first year I ever went to Walt Disney World.
Okay.
The infamous 25th anniversary birthday cake castle.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I hope we don't ever do anything that bad again. Did you ever see it?
I have not. I've only seen pictures of it.
It was bad. And that was my first ever memory of Walt Disney World, was walking down Main Street and seeing this.
What's this big like, pink atrocity at the end of the road?
Right. And you go up and you're like, that's not what the pictures looked like. But in 1996, the villas became part of the Disney Institute. Now, have you ever heard of the Disney Institute, Chad?
Oh, I have. They're still around today.
They are, but it is a lot different than what it used to be.
Okay.
Do you know what it used to be?
It seems like, and this is just stretching my knowledge of Saratoga here, but it seems like they repurposed the buildings of Saratoga. And it used to be like you could go on vacation, but sign up for a variety of classes that were pretty much all day classes or 4 or 5 hour classes where you could take a cooking or culinary arts, photography, all different kinds of self and personal improvement classes.
You hit the nail on the head. And actually, my little sister actually took an animation class there. And some of these buildings house some of the artists that did Lilo and Stitch. So they were moving people around, but a lot of the animators taught these classes. So my sister actually got to learn how to draw Eeyore. That was her favorite character back in the day. And she got to learn how to draw Eeyore at the Disney Institute. So she went and did that. I went and had golf lessons. But it was really cool. She came back jazzed about wanting to be an animator. And I remember just driving down this long road, coming to these buildings that blended right in with the pine trees. And for whatever reason, that I just had that vivid memory of the Disney Institute with the buildings literally hiding in the trees. But you were right. This was a place for people to come and vacation, but also to learn. Michael Eisner was now the CEO, and he really wanted to make it a multi-generational, multi-use facility where it didn't matter how old or how young you were, you could come and you could learn at Walt Disney World. It wasn't just going to be for the parks. You're also going to have an opportunity to learn here. And this is where we start getting into the controversy, is with the Disney Institute. So as you said, it was an educational facility. Cast members shared the training techniques on customer service and how to do different activities. Like you said, photography, gardening, animation, all these different things. It was actual Disney cast members, Disney professionals teaching individuals how to do these activities. So for a fee, this is 1996, for a fee of $3,700, guests could vacation at Walt Disney World while learning how to become better people and professionals. That's an awfully big price tag, but an even bigger task. We're going to create better people and professionals. Wow, that's a lofty goal.
I'm telling you, I know today one of our Facebook moderators in the Mighty VC Points community groups, Tamara Spidell, she goes about every year to a Disney Institute training, but it's on Disney's ways of customer service and professional development. So they're still around today, and it seems like they're just north of $4,000 for a day or two type class.
Yes.
But
yes, so we'll get into that in a second, because the Disney Institute today is not the Disney Institute from
yesteryear, huh?
25 years ago.
Okay.
As I said, this was a way to preach and teach Disney's best practices with your standard Walt Disney World trip. $3,700 standard Walt Disney World trip in 1996. I wouldn't call it standard. Standard today. But this idea proved to be very unpopular because the attendance numbers were dwindling, both in the parks as well as with Disney Institute. So this was a tough time for the Walt Disney World Resort because a lot of people weren't going like they do now. So to fans, the Disney Institute, it had a niche. It had a niche market. So you either loved it or you didn't like it. Saratoga Springs represents, to the people who loved the Disney Institute, the end of something wonderful. And that's an actual quote. I don't know where it came from, but many people were on record for saying that Saratoga Springs represents the ending of something wonderful.
Well, in all fairness, we did kind of like repurpose the buildings and build the DVC resort. Okay.
This is true.
Where Carriage House is, where we check in, that whole building was Disney Institute.
Yep.
And I think the DVC Preview Center may have been as well.
I believe so. There's a little bit more about the Disney Institute in the early days. So there were 40 different programs. We've already kind of touched on those a little bit. And they were offered in 3 days as well as week-long packages. And for these animation, gardening, what have you, they ranged from $429 to $1,300 for this kind of educational experience. So the conference center was one of the buildings that was renovated and absorbed into the Institute. And along with the conference center, there were 28 program studios, 220-foot performance center, an 1,100-seat outdoor amphitheater, 400-seat cinema. they had their own closed circuit TV station. Like, how cool would that be to have right now? Like, we could get up-to-date Walt Disney World news in our resorts. Like, how cool would that be?
The WDW Today channel, the default one when you turn on your TV, that's still my favorite channel. That's somewhat of a closed caption TV that I really wish they would put on Disney Plus.
And if you're, I agree.
Yeah, if you're a Disney Plus subscriber, please come back in there and put that channel in and feedback, because I think that would just be an awesome to just be able to sit back and start streaming and take me to the parks that day. Okay.
They had the TV station, but they also had a radio station. Can you guess what the call signs or the call letters were? I'm sure you can. It's pretty easy.
It's got to either be WWDW or WALT or
WALT.
All right.
That's just really cool. Any throwback to Walt gives me happy thoughts. But finally, this is before the Wide World of Sports was built. And they had a sports and fitness center with a full service spa. Now, those were repurposed and are now part of Saratoga Springs as well. But finally, this is probably the most unique thing of the Disney Institute. So there was a restaurant called Seasons. And what made it so unique is it featured a menu that rotated nightly.
Really?
Yes, sir. Can you imagine that? You could go to the same restaurant every single night and have a totally different menu every day.
How would Disney fans eat? Because they normally stock the menus online and figure out what they're going to eat.
Be able to.
180 days in advance, okay? I'm like...
180 days, give me every single night at Seasons. You never know. Chef's choice, what's on the menu today? So with all that there on property, on that one single plot of land, guests had the opportunity to choose from over 80 programs. 80 programs. We've already touched on the big ones: animation, culinary, gardening, photography. There were so many more. Like, the list was endless, it seemed like. And obviously, we just highlighted the big ones. But in 2000, Disney changed the focus of the Institute from family-oriented programming to a multi-day seminar for business professionals. This is the Disney Institute that Tamara goes to. And here you learn the secrets behind Disney customer service and Disney's business culture. Now, this concept didn't last as long. So the resort closed in 2003, and they needed to figure out what they were going to do. So in 2003, everything's closed. Most of the villas were torn down, except for the Treehouse Villas, which were renovated and opened at a later date. The former Disney Institute program studios and spa building were renovated as the clubhouse for Saratoga Springs. But the Disney Institute today exists in a shell of its former self. So it's typically hosted at Disney's Contemporary Resort.
I was going to say, think that they're in Celebration or off property, and then they just come back into like a conference center space at Contemporary or something along those lines.
Yep. So, and on top of that, they also have an opportunity now where Disney can come to your business. If you go to the ones at Walt Disney World, they teach you the skills and then they go and show you how to implement them actually in the park. You're not only getting book sessions, but you're actually getting hands-on learning, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Get to really see the way Disney does business from the inside.
Very few that do it as good as they do.
Yeah, and maybe if people are interested, we'll bring Tamara in one day to tell us more about her experiences there, because I know she goes all the time, and she'd love to come back in and tell people about it if they want to hear more. So if you want to hear more, post in the MyDVC Points community group, and we'll see if we can bring Tamara in on a show to tell us more about what they do today. But it's got a really interesting history for how this thing essentially twisted and became the resort that we all like today, or most of us like today. That one's a controversial subject.
It is. We've got another twist here.
Okay.
So we've mentioned the Treehouse Villas a few times and mentioned that they were closed. So they closed to the public in 2002. And they were immediately used to house the International College Program cast members. Now, I say immediately, they were tagged to be used, but they weren't officially in use until November 2005. So they were being used, but not being used. And they were in use as college program from November 2005 to January of 2008. Now we've got that little nugget about the treehouse villas. And this is the last jump back in time, because now we need to insert where DVC came into the picture.
Okay.
So DVC came into the picture in January of 2002. Disney executives confirmed that the Disney Institute was going away. They confirmed the change, and they confirmed that a new Disney Vacation Club property would be part of the grounds of the Disney Institute. At the time of the announcement, though, the DVC property didn't have a theme, let alone a name. Eventually, Saratoga Springs. Chad, do you know anything about Saratoga Springs, the actual town that it's based off of?
Yeah, it's Saratoga Springs, New York. It's upstate New York, and it's kind of got a Victorian-style theming. And it seems like there was a horse track there, or there's horse farms, or it's very horse-orientated up at Saratoga Springs, the real place.
The horse track is actually what drew people to the town. That was all that was there, was that and the springs itself, but it was the horse track that brought people back then. You could equate it to a modern-day Hamptons. So where the who's who of New York would go and vacation. Where the Hamptons had the beach, Saratoga Springs had the racetrack.
Okay, fair enough.
Now, of course, Disney is known for its theming, and they really did a good job. Now, we walked this a couple months ago, and I was blown away by the theming that they had here. It really brings in that culture of the equestrian lifestyle, of being at the track. They incorporated it all throughout the clubhouse, and I would assume, now we didn't walk the entire property, but I would assume, Chad, that that theme goes throughout the entire resort. Am I right?
It's pretty consistent. I mean, if you're outside at the top of the hour, you'll hear the kind of a sound, like the horse starting out there. You've got the bronze statue of the horse that's out there. Brian, did I walk you into the lobby and show you the children's area?
You walked me into the lobby, but you told me about it afterwards.
Ah, I failed. Okay.
It's okay. It's just another reason to go back.
Yeah. So when you
go, we were on a mission to go and check out the golf course.
Yeah. So when you go back, or the listeners go in there, be sure to check out all of the children's area and the artwork that's up there, because Disney pays homage to all of the famous horses from all of the Disney cartoons. For example, Philippe from Beauty and the Beast has his own portrait on the wall. And you can see the same one from Snow White. You can see all of the various different horses throughout all the classic Disney films. They're all have a portrait on the wall.
That's really cool. Now I really have to go back and check these out.
Yeah, it's really, really, really kind of cool in there. And then when you start heading down towards Turf Club, you're going to start to see some jockeys uniforms that are framed and pressed and matted onto the walls, kind of like you would do sports star jerseys.
Yep.
Hockey jerseys or baseball jerseys, something along those lines. Well, the lamps, I was able to pick up one from one of the refurb rooms, and I'm looking at it right now. It's behind me, and it actually has a horseshoe and a jockey riding a horse inside the lamp. Now, I don't know what they replaced it with yet, but yeah. A friend of mine that's a cast member got me into Cast Connections, and I was able to snag a DVC lamp from the room legitimately.
That is cool. That's cool. That's a hidden gem, if you know a cast member, to try to get you into Cast Connections.
Yeah, and if you guys check out the live, you'll see it behind me, and you just have to look back there or mention it, and I'll grab it and bring it onto a live one day, or point it out, but it sits right behind me. It's got a green base and kind of a black horse that's on there, and I didn't bring it home with a lampshade, because that was just too much trouble to haul, but I threw one on that I had here.
Well, next time I'm in Detroit, it may be coming back to Charlotte.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen.
Something else about Saratoga Springs. You actually turned me on to this. So I'm going to let you tell me about this. What can you tell me about the invention of the potato chip?
Okay, so this is actually kind of cool. So if you ever eat at Artist Palette at Saratoga Springs, they will serve what's called Saratoga chips. And I'll throw the actual historical video from YouTube. There's a few of them out there. So let me tell you a little bit about this. This could be one of those urban legend kind of a deals where it could be some history, some facts, some blown up. But I'll actually put the YouTube videos in the show notes for this episode. Just look at the episode number or scroll down and through the show notes and come back in, and you can click over and see them through the podcast player. But I'll put that in there. And so the legend goes like this. The potato chip was actually invented in Saratoga Springs, according to legend. So what you have happening is a gentleman by the name of George Crumb was a chef at a restaurant, and somebody asked him to create the potatoes smaller. Like, they sent the potatoes back a couple of times and they kept asking him to make them smaller. So finally, he got so tired of having his potatoes sent back, out of pure spite, he shaved the potatoes with the knife as thin as he could possibly get them, and then put them in a bat of oil and fried them till like they were super, super, super crispy. And then to make matters worse, he dumped a ton of salt on them to make them almost inedible, to kind of come back in and out of an act of spite, serve them out here. And essentially what he served the guy was a what we would consider a thicker potato chip today by today's machine standards. But George actually created these things, and the guy actually loved them. Now, there's rumors out there that this was Rockefeller, who was the snooty patron that did this. I think Lay's put out some information that to those lines at one point in time in some of their marketing material. Some of the historians have kind of debated that, but this is kind of, let's just take it for fun for urban legends. So you kind of see that potato chips were kind of developed out of snark and spite.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
And a nice little tidbit to go over to Artist Palette and get the potato chips there.
Yeah. So one of my favorite dishes over there is the turkey wrap sandwich, the club turkey wrap. And it's always served with Saratoga chips. And so now you know the story, and you can actually sit there and pull up the video on YouTube and just search for origin of the potato chip and enjoy some of the salty, crunchy treats and play back the video and at least share the story, or at least the legend. I'm not going to confirm that it's true or false. That's not my jam, but I can tell you it's a fun story.
It's a really fun story. Almost as fun as it is to eat the chips itself.
Yeah, that's true. Now, I will say I kind of like the Lay's a little bit better than what they serve there, because they're a thicker potato chip, because they are human made and handmade.
Yep.
Whereas Lay's factory can machine up those things pretty darn fine. But that's just my take on it. But I think it would be something fun to come back in and tell your kids the story and serve them some potato chips and let them revel in the story.
That's really cool. Thanks for teaching me something today.
Yeah, no problem, Ryan.
So where else should we go on this journey? I mean, we've covered the history, the peaks and valleys of what is Saratoga Springs. Where else should we go?
Well, I think there's some more commentary here about the treehouses as well. Because like you mentioned, in 2002, they were closed to the public and they started the treehouse project. But they didn't really become DVC till quite some time after the resort was built. And so the controversy here comes in because the resort was pretty much sold out and done. And it was completely done like the way Boulder Ridge was done, or the Wilderness Lodge Villas at Boulder Ridge was done. And then they came back in and added on these treehouses and converted them all to DVC. And then they sold, you know, another million points or more of treehouses into the Saratoga Springs Resort. And while these things they're unique, I love them, we have a whole show on them, some of the owners looked at this and said, wait a minute now, this isn't really what we signed up for. These weren't supposed to be part of the plan. And it kind of created some controversy there. But as we talked about earlier, Disney gets all the voting rights. So there's really not a lot that members could do about it. And talking with some of the members here and some of the scuttlebutt that was out there.
And somehow it didn't even make it to my history. So maybe it's the unspoken history that we've now just shared with the world.
Or it could just be I ran across some disgruntled DVC members that fed me a line. Who knows? Okay.
It could be that too.
I'm not claiming that it's, you know, super accurate. I can just tell you what I have heard from some longtime Saratoga Springs members, that there was some controversy and discussion. And we can't even go back to Facebook that far because, I mean, you're talking early 2000s, okay? True. It predates Facebook. That's normally where DVC members go to gripe today is Facebook. So maybe I could head over to Mouse Owners and see if they have something. way back there at that point in time, if they're still databasing all of those conversations from those years gone by.
I'm sure somebody has saved.
Yeah, it's probably out there someplace.
Just got to go down that rabbit hole far enough.
Yeah. So for right now, I'll just sum up the tree houses as they were an addition onto the resort. And some people were happy about it. Some people weren't. I think they're a great addition to DVC. So all things said and done now, I'm pretty happy about it. But I don't know how I would have felt had I owned a resort and they added a whole bunch more points to my resort and maintenance costs, because they are standalone units, whereas everything else is a huge building that has a lot of efficiencies. And I think you're going to lose some of that efficiencies in 60 standalone buildings. I think that was kind of the crux of the argument.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. Now, have you ever stayed at the Treehouse Villas?
Oh, yeah, I've stayed there a couple times. I love them. And Lincoln, the little guy you hear at the end of the show, it's his absolute favorite place.
That's awesome. It is on my bucket list. That's actually the resort that my mom stayed at on her first trip to Walt Disney World back in the 70s. So they actually stayed in the original Treehouse Villas.
I'll have to scrape up some points together, Brian, and pull us off a guy's trip again or something along those lines.
Twist my arm, why don't you, Chad?
I'm telling you, you know how many points they are and how much talking I'm going to have to do to like pull that one off?
I have no clue. How many points are they for a standard weekend?
Well, you're probably talking three times as much as a studio that I could get.
And they sleep what? Nine?
Yeah, they sleep nine people, but their charm isn't that they're spacious in accommodation. Their charm is that they're an individual unit, and that's what people kind of like about them. And believe it or not, it's one of the first areas of Saratoga that will sell out is the tree houses. Yeah, they're pretty dang popular.
Just because they're so unique?
Yeah, they're unique and people want to try them, and you either love them or hate them. And enough people love them that they're one of the first things in Saratoga to sell out. Now, granted, Saratoga is one of the last resorts to sell out, but them and the studios there will go pretty fast, all things said and done. Brian, do you have anything else on history of the resort that your research found?
I don't, bud. I think we've covered it all.
Okay. Well, I want to thank you for coming and joining us on the show today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure coming on.
Well, I think we've got a Vero Beach show that you've been researching for us to do a little bit of history.
I'm almost ready.
All right.
Almost ready. Just tag me in, coach.
Put you in, coach. Okay.
Put me in, coach.
Yeah. So we'll get that thing scheduled here pretty soon. And I think the Vero Beach is just going to be a 2-episode series. And the actual review has already been recorded. So we just need the history to come back in. And hopefully my plan is to spend the winter with people hitting these beach resorts. Because have sympathy on me, I'm in Michigan and it could be 12 inches of snow outside. And as I look at my watch, and today it was in the 30s, I think we're going to hit the beach resorts over the winter just to kind of, if nothing else, get me out of this cold, dreary place and take me someplace warm and sunny.
Well, I'll make sure I send you lots of pictures from Walt Disney World when I go.
That sounds great. Thanks again for coming on the show, Brian.
Thanks, buddy. I appreciate you having me as always.
You can find me on the Main Street Chronicles podcast, which is part of the Imagination Radio Network. And this is a monthly history show, and we just wrapped up season one talking about the Society of Explorers and Adventurers. Now, starting in January, we're going to be diving into a new topic. Over the next 12 months, we're going to introduce you to 12 legendary Imagineers. Now, you have heard all of their names before, but we're going to do it in a way that you've never seen before. We're going to be creating a virtual Museum of Imagination and allow you to truly see the inside of what these unique individuals have created.
Thank you so much for that wonderful recap there, Brian. And I'd like to also thank BC and CC Owner for their awesome 5-star review here on iTunes. Chad and his guest speakers are experts on how to stretch your membership and create the best family vacations. I learn valuable tips each episode, and I love the community they've built. Keep the podcast coming. I always look forward to the next one and getting to know the guests better. Thank you for that review and being an awesome member of our community group. Within the last couple of weeks, I've had people offer to do link shares. Let me promote your group and let me promote my group and yours. And I had to decline. And here's the reason why. We have an awesome Facebook group of people who listen to this show and are engaged and interact with us. And I don't want just any Disney fans in the group. I want people who believe to our core values and our core message that DVC is a wonderful product. We can learn from each other by sharing our ideas. We can keep a positive disposition, but yet be realistic and respectfully talk about things that we like and don't like, but always have respect towards DVC, the cast members, and our fellow neighbors. Thank you for listening. Thank you to the Patreons that support the show. And thank you to DVC Resale Market and Vacation Club Loans for supporting our show and helping us create a quality product and build an awesome community. Without all of your help and support, we couldn't do what we do. Thanks for listening, everybody, and have a magical day.
Ladies and gentlemen, please watch your head and step as you exit, and take small children by the hand.
Aw, cheer up, Dad. You know we'll come back. With DVC.
My DVC Points is an unofficial Disney-inspired podcast created by fans of Disney Vacation Club. The thoughts expressed in this podcast are personal opinions and personal experiences. My DVC Points is not affiliated with Disney Vacation Club, the Walt Disney Companies, or any subsidiaries. We encourage listeners to contact their DVC guide or member services for official DVC policies.
Well, can I give you a little... can I go off on a tangent for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
The new version of it that was just rolled out at Coronado Springs puts that channel to shame.
Really?
Oh my goodness. Let me just go on a tangent here. You walk in, and first of all, it says, welcome, whatever your family name is. Every time you turn the TV on, welcome blank family. You go to the next page. You've got your Walt Disney World Today. The next page, they have handpicked movies for your family that you can stream. Like, how did they know?
So what'd they pick for you?
We were there. I was there with my co-host Stokes and his wife. And the first two were both of our favorite Pixar movies. So Cars was first for me. And Ratatouille was second for him. And then there was Dumbo, which was my favorite. They had the Jungle Book. They had Monsters, Inc., which is Stokes' wife's favorite Pixar film. And it's like, wait a minute. And there's 10 movies on there. I think it's 10. It's either 10 or 12. And we're just like, we know Disney like watches everything that we do online, but how did they know exactly what to put in here?
That's interesting. I'm going to look forward to see if Riviera was built with that same technology in their TVs.
I would assume they would be.
Yeah. We'll find out in January, but okay. So,
but yeah, that's something to look forward to. And even though Coronado Springs is not DVC, I would highly recommend you go and take a look at it.
Yeah, I'll have to do that.
And then the rooftop bar. Oh, I know we go to Top of the World, but this bar, they have a bar called Dahlia. There is a patio that you can actually look out and see Galaxy's Edge.
Nice.
Like down into Galaxy's Edge.
Nice.
So anyway, we've gone on a tangent here, but that's kind of what we do. That's who we are. As we've already mentioned, the parks were fading, and actually cut that because we already skipped that. So on top of the radio station.
Oh, let me just bring us back in.
Okay.
Okay. Squirrel. We're officially done with that one. Let's get back on track.